You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Can only come from you. Ghetto people, yeah.
What are you gonna
gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all? Yeah.
Our government cares about you.
They ain't giving up a second thought about you. No. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means, so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you're going to have a good day and a good weekend. And I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it's not, and you know it must be done, you will get it done, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And that's why we love you, respect you, appreciate you for your tenacity. You don't procrastinate. You get it done. But if it really doesn't have to get done, stay safe. Always stay safe. Protect yourself. Always wear a mask in public. Stay distanced. Serious. Stay distance. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page is podcast. Click on that. And then the drop down will be the first one, African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. This program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays, from 6 p.m. to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed, followed by, at 8 p.m., Black Therapy Central with Dr. Moye Kamban and her daughter, Nataki Kamban. At 9 o'clock, Conversations, Reparations, every first and third Mondays, Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers at 8 p.m. from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. On Thursdays, After 7, hosted by Shawnee B. After 7, that's the millennial group. And then on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays, Black Reality Think Tank's two programs is Sister Talk will host LaWanda Chambers, and then the Sankofa Elders Council with Brother Alfonso Watkins on Saturday evening. On Sunday from 7 p.m. until it's Time for an Awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Sunday. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. You can get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. Please go online, check it out, WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Taihimba. I talked to Brother Bomani, and he still has a program coming up. It's a program. He still has a tour coming up next month, September 4th through the 14th, Senegal and Gambia, only $3,500. Followed by a South African tour, November 20th through the 30th, $3,700. Followed by a Ghanaian repatriation investment tour, December 24th through January 5th, 2021, $3,700. Brother Bomani will be my guest next week, the 19th. And I'm looking forward to talking with Brother. No, that's the week after. I apologize. It's the week after. Because next week, Wednesday, Brother Mukasa, former SNCC coordinating, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee member, and solid brother, Brother Africa in our community, Brother Mukasa. And then on Friday, next week, Friday, the 14th, Baba Baruti. So it's next week, Wednesday, because the 17th is Marcus Garvey's birthday, and we're going to have a celebration. And so next week, Wednesday, the 19th, Brother Bomani Tahimba will be my guest. But check it out. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. You want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to talk to my good brother, his number is 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. That's AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brother Renoko will be my guest. He'll be on shortly, but he also has a tour coming up. It was changed, and it's January 21st to February 4th, going to Uganda and Rwanda, January 21st to February 24th. And he also still has a tour in August 1st through the 14th of 2021, going to Kemet. Brother Renoko Rashidi, go to his website, drrenoko.com. drrenoko.com. If you want to give Brother Rashidi a call, it's 323-803-8663. That's 323-803-8663. Brother Renoko Rashidi. Habesha, incorporated.org. Habesha stands for Helping Africans Establish Schools at home and abroad. Habesha Incorporated, they are doing the work. They are doing the work here, and they're doing the work on the continent with the Kashi Project, and they need our help. Donuts. Damn, I must be hungry. Donations truly are accepted and appreciated, and they're desperately needed to fulfill the mission of the Kashi. The Kashi Incorporated.org, the Kashi Project. The Habesha, of course, is. But it's the Kashi Project in Ghana. So check out HabeshaIncorporated.org. Us Lifting Us. No, let me go here first. The Medu Bookstore. Saw Mama Nia the other day. I was at the Greenbrier Mall. She's well. Store's open, so check it out. If you are looking for books and you are in the Atlanta area and you're near the Greenbrier Mall, check out Mama Nia, but give her a call. If you're looking for something and she has it, come on, get it. But if not, she'll get it for you, and then come on, get it. 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. That's the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. And then, of course, that's the Black Dot Cultural Center Bookstore in Lithonia with Brother Gazimdi Ajamu. And the number to call it is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta, located at 878 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. The number to call is 404-444-1635. 404-444-1635. They also have We Buy Black products. They have the laundry detergent, the toothbrushes, all kinds of good stuff. They have the We Buy Black products. Because We Buy Black used to have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall right next to the Medu Bookstore. But, of course, times of being what they are. And so, but they also have the red, black, and green shoes, the NASGAS shoes at Wadada's and also at We Buy Black. And they also have Afroletics. Those are the athletic wear by the brother created with the African themes, the Zulus, the Omex, the Dogon Star Seed, and many others, the Head Roos, the Rebels. So check it out at Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, they had their Thursday night broadcast last night. And, of course, it's on Blog Talk, blogtalkradio.com/ULU. And the program is called Dare to Win. every Thursday night at 9 p.m. from 9 to 10. Us Lifting Us, Ulu. And the number to call is, and you can call to listen or you can call to make questions or comments or concerns at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Sanjay Dash Haiti, Sister Gabrielle really is doing outstanding work in the island of Haiti, in the northeast portion, in the rural area, deserving to be supported. Please go to her website at Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E, dash, Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I, .org. Sanjay-Haiti.org. And, of course, Akabin Institute. Brothers and sisters, Baba Baruti, they're getting ready for their school year. And of course, Akabin Institute, you can make money orders or checks made out to Akabin Institute, and you can send them to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. Or you can send Cash App, or PayPal rather, yabaruti at Yahoo for the PayPal. Give them a call at 404-753-7237 because the class is about to start. It's virtual. So maybe you want to enroll your child and you live in another state or another city. That's possible. The class is virtual. And it's open for students from fourth grade to the 12th grade. So if you have a fourth grader and up, you can enroll. All right. Also to tomorrow, Baba Baruti and Sister Ya Baruti, their gatherings, the men's gathering is African-centered nation building for Baba Baruti. It's at 12 noon from 12 to 2 tomorrow, from 12 to 2 tomorrow. And send in your donation or $10. You can send in PayPal, Ya Baruti at Yahoo, or Cash App at $ Ya, Y-A-A-M, and B-A-R-U-T-I. Include the pertinent information, of course. It's Brother Circle. And then your name and your email address so they can send you the link. Okay? And that is tomorrow from 12 to 2. Following that program from 4 to 6 is Sister Ya. Her topic is resisting the horrification of African women. Resisting the horrification. The horrification. Of African women. And that's going to be tomorrow from 4 to 6. Same thing applies. Send your donation, $10 and $5 for the young adults. PayPal, Ya Baruti at Yahoo, or Cash App, $ Ya M Baruti. Okay? And of course, Sister Circle, the pertinent information is Sister Circle, your name. And, of course, the email address so they can send you the link. And that's coming up this Saturday. Outstanding. All right. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Also, too, like I said, I got, well, let me get this before I start with the Inye Sesim. One of the sisters sent me this information. Hotep brothers and sisters, we need your help getting our hotline number out there to our communities nationwide. And the hotline number is 1-833-358-7483. This is the Just For Us Coalition. In fact, you can put in J-U-S, the number 4, U-S, coalition at gmail.com, the Just For Us Coalition. And here's about, and they have a Zoom tomorrow. That was Zoom tomorrow. The People Just For Us Coalition was born out of the concern for people of African descent during the racial and health pandemic of 2020. Volunteers from across the nation are assisting the coalition as we monitor the increasing number of serious incidents involving our people, people of African descent. We strive to be part of the solution because the problem of police brutality, harassment, and hate crimes is still rampant in this country.
In the words of our ancestor, Vernon Johns, when you see a good fight, get into it. I know that's right. You see a good fight, Vernon Johns. Oh, man, that's a deep story you need to look up, Vernon Johns. And his family in Mississippi, high yellow brother, but good brother, man, strong man. Just J-U-S, the number 4, U-S, National Committee meeting will be tomorrow at 5 p.m. Eastern. 5 p.m. Eastern, join the Zoom meeting. And the meeting number, Zoom meeting number is 8, the meeting ID number is 893-8924-7629. That's 893-8924-7629. And you can get that connection, that web connection, by calling that information, that number. And that's 1-833-358-7487. The Just for Us Coalition. Like I said, also too, Baba Renoko should be on very shortly, followed by Baba Baruti next week, Friday. But next week, Tuesday, Baba Mukasa, and then next week, not Tuesday, next week, Wednesday, apologize. And then next week, week after that, will be Brother Bomani Tayemba. So, before I read the Enye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought, August 6th, our children are blessings of our lives. They are the living embodiment of the future. They are the future knocking at the doors of the present. They are sacred. We should defend our children the way we defend our religion. Askaya Ture. One of the most interesting things about traditional African culture is that the children were involved in the legal process. Their participation was not active in the sense of making decisions, but as observers. They sat quietly as students who listened, learning about the process so that when they come of age, they would not have to find out how a legal system operates from a formal detached setting. They were present at virtually all public judicial procedures, some in special training, were even allowed to quietly sit in the back of the meeting, requiring only a small collection of council members. And of course, as members of the community at large, they were present at collective political and judicial adult debates. Our children watched and learned without interfering with the process because it was understood that they were not mature enough to think at the level and had much to learn before they could formulate questions of worth. But we must consider the value of that now as we begin the process of re-Africanization because our children have not been raised with an emphasis on the same communal prioritizing values that they were in when they were in a traditional African society. So affirm, I count my blessings. I know that's right. Affirm, I count my blessings. And we need to do that. Count our blessings. August 7th. Stand on your own two black feet and fight like hell for your place in the world. Amy Jacques Garvey. We are not them. We cannot be them without losing sanity. No one can be an African and a European because our ways are irreconcilably incompatible. Not even amalgamation could change that. Our way is, has been, and always will be purely African. This is what we stand for. This is what we fight for. This is what we live for. And this is what we die for. So we cannot ask ourselves the mental side of questions others put into our minds. We cannot ask ourselves irrelevant questions of or believing answers that which leads to forgetfulness. Our questions must always lead us home. For how can you find your way home by forgetting your way home? How can you find your way home by forgetting how you got to where you are now? How can you find your way home without fighting, without figuring out how you got lost in the first place? Unless you see home as some backward, barbaric, pagan outland or limit in it to the place your stolen ancestor were brought to, you must look further than the deception of Caucasian lies to find our truth. Affirm, I am and I will always be African. That last line, in case you didn't get it, it says, a place you were stolen, our ancestors were brought to. So, no, brothers and sisters, we are not from Mississippi. We are not from Georgia. We're not from South Carolina or North Carolina or Kentucky or Tennessee. We are from Africa. They are not our home. I know many people have allegiance because that's where their people are from, or maybe they were even born there. But we are Africans. August 8th. Now is the time for us to come together with one another to organize, to speak out, and speak up on behalf of each other. There is no time to waste. While we debate, define, and discuss, the enemy continues its genocidal plan. Political prisoner Mutulu Shakur. Mutulu Shakur. A secret is a secret. If you have one, no one knows you have it. Some warriors have been so accepting of their westernized socialization that makes them need to be consistently be seen and heard. That is a virtually impossible for them to keep a secret. Secrets win and lose wars. Unbeknownst to some of us, attention is not what African warriors need. In fact, if the truth be told, in this reality, that is the last thing that serious African warrior scholars need. Guerrilla warriors thrive on the secrecy that camouflage quietly gives. An Ethiopian proverb says that confiding a secret to an unworthy person is like carrying grain in a bag with a hole. We have to know who we are talking to and when not to talk, no matter who we are conversing with. Armies of righteous soldiers are required for wars that return a people's peace and bring order to the world. Such armies have to be built. They do not magically appear, and recruits are not summoned in the public court. Our position must not be remain a public spectacle. I say, affirm, I do not seek out attention from unworthy persons. Affirm, I do not seek out attention from unworthy persons. The Nyasasim of daily revolutionary thought. And Amy Jacques Garvey, man, that was deep, wasn't it? I'm going to bring my guest on in a second, Brother Dr. Rinoco Rashidi, my good friend. But I'm going to say these two for, right quick. And I have these sayings, like I do the Marcus Garvey, Kwame Nkrumah piece and Marumba Ani and so forth. And so this is one, and I'm quite sure Baba Rashidi might like this. Your philosophy determines your thought pattern. Your thought pattern determines your attitude. Your attitude determines your attitude determines your behavior pattern, and your behavior pattern determines your action. It begins with your philosophy. It begins with what you think and ends with what you do, your actions. But if, what do you do for yourself? What you do for yourself depends upon what you think of yourself. And what you think of yourself depends upon what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends upon what you have been told. So if I've been told something, and that helps establish my philosophy, and if I've been told the wrong things, and then my thought pattern will be wrong, my behavior pattern will be wrong, and of course, my actions will be wrong. What have we been told? Brothers and sisters, I'd like to welcome Baba Rinoco Rashidi. Good morning, Baba. How you doing?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
I am well today. I am well. You remember that quote? That was Dr. Withers? Withers?
Quad David Whitaker. About 10 years ago,
yeah,
I was on a tour to Ghana, as a kind of a historian, I guess you might say, for a group of young people and older people too. And Kwai David was one of the keynote speakers. And he's a very calm, deliberate sort of brother when he speaks. He has, a PhD and a law degree. And he made that statement, what you do for yourself depends on what you think of yourself. And what you think of yourself depends on what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends on what you have been told. That just resonated with me.
Me too.
So simple and basic.
Yeah.
And really crystallized what I guess I could call my philosophy of history. These days, in particular, with so many things going on, the pandemic, the struggle for racial justice, just trying to make it from day to day, people often wonder, well, why are you spending all this time with what happened yesterday? Why are you spending time with history? Mm-hmm. And that pretty much summarizes it. And we have to constantly say that over and over again. Shouldn't have to say it, but we do, because a lot of us simply don't want to deal with history. And why is that? Is because history, I think, for many African Americans, is associated almost exclusively with slavery.
Yeah.
And the sufferings of our ancestors. And who wants to deal with that? So we have to begin to create a new kind of narrative, a new viewpoint, a new perspective, a new way of looking at ourselves for ourselves. And I know when I'm talking to you, I'm speaking to the choir, because you feel the exact same way.
Ashe. And that's why I think the work that you do, the work that our African-centered scholars and historians do, those who are like yourself, a primary research, or those who go to all the, and I know you go to all of the museums, you know.
And I used to.
I know.
You know, my brother, I've always been, well, no, I don't know if I'll say always, but as long as I can remember, going back to the time I was a teenager, I've had a fear of running out of time. And that has driven me. I've been obsessed by that. And so for much of my life, I really tried to do as much as I can, maybe too much. But now, if I never go to another museum, heaven forbid, if I never visit another country, heaven forbid, I can spend the rest of my life, which hopefully will be a very, very, very long experience.
Ashe.
Kind of crystallizing and sharing and archiving the data and the photos that I've come up with. I have hundreds of thousands of photographs from the museums and tombs and temples and various Black communities that I visited. Mm-hmm. So I have had and continue to have a life well lived. And with the support of you and sisters and brothers like you, it is just so many doors have been opened to me, and I'm grateful for that.
Well, to me, my contribution is necessary because I believe in you and I believe what you do, because it is necessary for our people. I support you because you bring the information prior, you know, to our captivity. You bring the information that is ancient. You bring the information that is right now. You have documented the African presence around the world. You have shown us, brothers and sisters, in Indonesia or Indochina, whatever term you want to use. You have shown brothers and sisters in the Pacific, you know, in places that many people, wow, really? There's African people there? And they're African people, from the melanated skin to the, you know, close curled hair. They're melanated people. And you have done that, and I appreciate you for that. Because what I'm trying to do with this program is educate our people, put something on our minds to help us to begin to think outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us, to think independently, to think courageously, you know. And it's so necessary for our future. So I appreciate the work that you have done. I know it's tough now because you can't get out. You can't get to another country or get to another museum. You know?
Well, as I heard an old white man say the other day, it is what it is. And in this case,
that was
correct.
Trump.
It is what it is.
That's Trump.
And we have to be able to adapt to that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I think our people have been in that situation for a long time, that we are forced to adapt to changing situations, and sometimes situations that are very, very, very harsh. And if nothing, you know, in the past, I think we could measure greatness by so many things. In the past, we could say that African people developed great literature, our built monumental architecture, any the mothers and fathers of science and technology.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we could measure our greatness perhaps by our ability to have survived one Holocaust after the other. Or as they say in the Nation of Islam, the hells of North America and the hells of our situation around the world. Because the situation of African people in America, and I am like you, an African living in America, our situation is we're in dire straits.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that I appreciate about what you are doing and have been doing is you've illuminated or helped to illuminate that struggle. For example, the struggle of our sisters and brothers in West Papua.
Yeah.
Now, that situation, very few people, or we don't talk about nearly enough, but West Papua is the western half of the island of New Guinea.
Yep.
The eastern half is Papua New Guinea, and our sisters and brothers are the victims of a genocidal onslaught.
Yeah,
by Indonesia, and I'm sure aided by the United States.
Yes.
You know, indirectly.
Because of resources.
We are in a position to draw attention to all of that. Here's another thing. I get a lot of emails or a lot of inquiries from the Dalits, the Black Untouchables of India, and more from Australia and some from the Pacific Islands, because what happened to George Floyd, which was just the tip of the iceberg, and the reaction to it resonated around the world. And so many groups of Black folk who normally would not be associated with the African diaspora or Pan-Africanism are reaching out to us. African Americans, Africans in America, are in a crucial or critical position because we have access to so many more resources that most other Africans don't. And at least we can be spokesmen. We can bring these other issues to the fore. So I salute you for doing that, bro.
Oh, always, Ashe. And you're right, because I try my best to help us understand that that link is there. We are one Africa. We are one African people. And the suffering of our people must be, you know, understood and alleviated by us. You know, when I first talked about the West Papua New Guinea, number of years ago, I was just so angry, and I saw some video of the Indonesian officers just beating up, just beating up these people, man, killing them just outright, you know, just like the British did with the what do they call the Aborigine people of what is now called Australia? What do they call themselves?
Well, that's interesting because at the time the British claimed Australia in January 1788, there were 600 indigenous nations there.
Oh, 600 wow. 600, wow.
Yeah. Now, when I went to Australia for the first time, one of the questions I wanted to raise and did raise, and I got an interesting response. I asked, what was the name for Australia before the white man came? And nobody could give me a good answer. People would say, well, this part was named this and this part was named that. And so in a sense, and I want you to think about this now. I want the audience to think about this, that Europeans, and I maybe have never articulated this before, have in a sense been a unifying force for us. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know if those sisters and brothers in Australia saw themselves as one people
right
before the Europeans came. And so I don't even know if I should say this in public, but sometimes I find that we are reacting to a European paradigm. I'll give you another example, a better example perhaps. People ask me quite frequently, Renoko Rashidi, what was the original name for the continent of Africa? Well, that's almost like you're asking a question that has a kind of a false premise, because you seem to be assuming that ancient people, including ancient African people, thought of themselves as living on a continent. Continents, as I've come to understand, are European phenomenon.
Yeah.
And it's only with the rise of Europeans that the concept of continent came into use. And so we seem to be looking at things from a European perspective. So I've said for a long time, I hope that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I've said for a long time that sometimes it's not so important to have all the answers, but just to know the right questions to begin to ask. from an African perspective. Does that make sense?
That makes great sense. Yeah. Because
I'm trying to figure it out too, bro.
Right. I know. We all are.
I'll say this last thing. I think a lot of times people listen to learned elders like yourself and hopefully myself. They assume, I think a lot of times, that we have all the answers.
No, we
don't. And we're probing and learning. We're students just like everybody else.
That's right.
Even more so.
That's right. Even more so because we want to know more. Some scratch the surface, but like yourself, you've gone deep, deep, deep. You know, you have, like I said, you have documented the African presence around the world, places where people would not think, and especially because of European, and this is how I phrase it, European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege has so permeated the world that being melanated is something that is to be despised, unfortunately. And so many countries, when they put out promotional material or videos or so forth, it is always the light skin or those who look most white are shown as if there are no dark people there. It's just like Brazil.
Yeah.
You know, there are more Africans in Brazil than any country except Nigeria. But if you look at promotional or their TV programs, you will not see them, you know. And, of course, they are suffering in Brazil because of the guy who's to the right of you and Donald Trump, their president, Bolsonaro, you know. And they're going to suffer for quite a while. They're the second largest cases of COVID after the United States. What's common is Trump and Bolsonaro. That's what's common. The ignorance of both of those men. And so the people are going to suffer. They now say that possibly before this year is out, that well over 250,000 people in this country would die of COVID-19. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
Well, that's the way it is. When you live in a place where you don't have power over yourself and you're unable to exert power over your destiny, those kinds of things happen. When I look at the situation in Brazil, that guy just doesn't seem to care at all.
No, he doesn't.
I mean, if anybody has less compassion than Trump, I think he's the one. He doesn't seem to give a damn.
Yeah.
And he's very arrogant about it, even more than the
even more than Trump, right. Even more than Trump. I think because of the United States, the way it is structured, as opposed to Brazil, is why he's acting and behaving the way that he does, more overtly racist, more overtly insensitive and inhumane, you know, because he came in, he was voted in because of the idea of those who had money and influence wanted to separate themselves from the other members of the Brazilian population, particularly from the slums, of those who they deemed as the outcast. And so he came in and said he's going to bring law and order to the point of he will kill them. Not that they will develop programs and put money into, you know, infrastructure and change things. No, he came with the idea, okay, we're just going to start shooting them. We're just going to start killing them. And they've doing it.
Let's stay with that for a moment. First of all, Brazil itself, I would say, has the third largest population of Africans in the world, because I always think of the black populations of India.
Right.
And then Nigeria and then Brazil. But either way, Brazil has a lot of black folk. And slavery was not abolished in Brazil until the middle of the 1880s.
Right.
So more than 20 years after the United States, slavery was continuing in Brazil. And that means if it was legally abolished, then it continued for a very, very long time. But, you know, one of the interesting things about Brazil, and I've been there, I don't know, four or five times. I've never heard anything and I'd love to see a study of this. Perhaps you know. I've never seen a study. I've never heard much about the history of Pan-Africanism in Brazil. Now, I went there. One of my more recent visits was, I believe, in 2010, either 2008 or 2010. And I spoke at a big conference there. The conference was mostly organized by Nigerians, who for whatever reason decided to have this African-centered conference at the University of Rio de Janeiro. And I was invited to be one of the keynote speakers. They only had three or four, and I was one. And while I was there, I mean, the center of attention was the great African-Brazilian scholar, Abdias do Nascimento. I had heard about him for a long time, but I had never met him before. And he was already in his 80s, and his wife did a presentation talking about his life and his work and his vision. And she showed a lot of pictures, and I said to myself, my goodness, a lot of those pictures sure do look familiar. So she's talking, and she says, and you know, I'd like to thank
you,
Dr. Renoco Rodriguez, whose photographs that we've used. But I never hear about, maybe because of the language barrier, I never hear about Garveyism in Brazil or history of Pan-Africanism in Brazil. And one other point, what you were saying about the head of state of Brazil and his attitude, like we will eliminate, physically, we will eradicate what I guess in his views are these black vermin who inhabit the favelas of Brazil. But that same attitude is not new. And I think that you can find something like that in the history of Argentina,
right,
or Chile, countries in what is called the Southern Cone of South America that formerly had very large black populations that may have even exceeded the white population. And now black folk in both those countries are a rarity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was in Chile over the summer, and I was in a taxi, and the taxi driver told me, he says, there aren't any black people in Chile. Now, what you have recently are Haitians coming over there because the Haitians have been brutalized. And there's that same tradition that there are no black people in Argentina, although right. I met some and told that there are millions of people of African heritage in Argentina. And I think that Brazil has tended to try to, this current leader has tended to follow that model of what has been called whitening
right.
of the population. And that's something we need to devote a lot more attention to, I think, at least from a historical perspective.
Right, because it's genocidal in nature. You know, what they did right after our captivity in Argentina was immediately round us up, kill us, and those who they did not, and those who were so-called mulatto, they were only to mate with Caucasians. And then that offspring was only allowed to mate with Caucasians. And so therefore, they erased or eliminated the African presence in Argentina by that method.
In large measure. Yeah. In large measure. But, yeah. But I found there are black folk in every country in South America. In 1999, another beautiful opportunity for me, there was a conference in a place called Barlavento, Venezuela. Barlavento was a Maroon community. The Maroons were the runaways who established their own communities, and you could even say established their own nations in some cases, like mm-hmm. Palmares in Brazil. And this conference was called the International Reunion of the African Family in Latin America. It was big, brother. Mm-hmm. One of the greatest mm-hmm. events I've ever participated in. And there were black folk from every country in South America, I think, except two, for some reason. One, there were no black folk from Suriname who came. Suriname is the Dutch colony
right.
in South America. Now it's a so-called independent country. And I don't recall meeting anybody from French Guyana. French Guyana or Guyane is the French colony in South America. But for the first time, I heard about and met sisters and brothers from Paraguay. And some fine sisters in Paraguay, my brother. In Uruguay, I knew you'd like that. Argentina.
You know I would.
You know, all kinds of places, man. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of us don't know. I'm going to do a presentation about this next month. Black populations in Bolivia, in Ecuador, in Colombia, in Peru, and, of course, Venezuela itself.
Yeah.
And you made a very, very interesting point, like all your points, about how the image of we see on television is that there aren't any black people in these countries.
Right.
So if you go to Bolivia, for example, even some of the Bolivians will tell you there are no black people in Bolivia. And I went and visited their communities. So I don't know. As I say, I think in the United States, ironically enough, we have access to resources where we can do research and we can bring this information to light. So again, I salute you. How long have you been doing this radio program, brother? What has it been, about 5 years now?
6 years. Six years, man. Yeah.
And I know those have been challenging years.
Yeah, yeah. Because I changed. I had to change equipment. It's always been a challenge and a struggle. But I'm determined to, you know, this is my part. This is my part to help free the African mind, you know. and to help us think independently, you know, think of sovereignty, to think of loving on ourselves and helping one another to transcend this madness that we're in. And not just here, of course, globally, because on the continent, well, I ain't got to tell you, you know what's happening on the continent and how messed up it is, you know. But there are glimmers of hope, and
yes, there are.
You know, and I want to continue to highlight them, give them voice, because I'm adamant about Africa being Africans. I'm adamant about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. In fact, the model of
I think one brother said it, whose name you know, Africa for the Africans.
That's right, at home and abroad.
That's
right. We're going to talk about him after the break. We're going to talk about the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. We're also going to talk about your upcoming Zoom presentation, August 28th and 29th, African Women in History and Art, Black Women in History and Art. We're going to talk about that and a lot of other good stuff, man. So listen, brothers and sisters, I'm going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, we'll have more conversation with the because me and you are personable, you know, how would I like really address you? The Honorable Dr. Renoko Rashidi.
I think Brother Renoko would do just fine, brother.
I hear you, man. I hear you. Okay. Brother Rashidi, man, I tell you, God bless you, man, for real, because the work that you're doing and what you have done is monumental, you know, because some people, you made a lot of sacrifice. You have made a lot of sacrifice on our behalf. And so did all the other African-centered scholars. Some of them, you know, when I think of Carter G. Woodson, he never married. He dedicated his life to presenting the history of our people to us. Now, granted, at the time, you know, why he chose February, because he didn't know that Abraham Lincoln didn't give a damn about us. But he chose Lincoln's birthday along with Frederick Douglass's birthday for February. You know, to be.
And he may have done that for political reasons.
Mm. Yep.
Perhaps even to get funding from mainstream,
right,
you know, capitalist institutions.
Yeah.
You know, it's very easy for us to put, you know, to be judgmental of other people who lived in different times, like the Maroons, for example. Now, the Maroons, I mentioned, were the escaped Africans who formed their own communities. But at a certain point in time, a lot of pressure was brought to bear on these communities by the French, the Dutch, the Spanish, the Portuguese, the English. And many of them signed treaties with those slave masters, slave owners, whatever term you want to use, slavers. And part of the agreement was always, we will give you, the Maroons, limited sovereignty. But from now on, anyone who escapes from the plantation of the Hacienda must be returned.
Right.
And some of the Maroons signed those treaties. Others did not. Now, it's very easy for us to sit here today and judge them and call them Uncle Toms or Sambos or sellouts or coons. But I think sometimes we have to be a bit more sensitive and try to put ourselves in the position of those folk, because you don't know what you would do under pressure.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Today, maybe I drank some truth serum this morning. I thought it was coffee. And I find myself raising issues that normally I wouldn't talk about in public, but might say in private.
Yeah.
But I think the words of Chancellor Williams, and I'll let you do your break. Chancellor Williams was a historian before I met Ivan Van Sertima and John Henry Clark and Dr. Ben. It was Destruction of Black Civilization. And in that book, he says, the African historian must be on a relentless search for truth and must not tremble with fear when that truth is contrary to what we would prefer to believe. So we think our history is so great, so grand, so glorious, it can stand on its own merit. But that does not, and that means I don't want to make stuff up. I want to look at the truth, the unvarnished truth, and see what we can take from that that will inspire us, but also we can learn from.
Right. Right. And sometimes you're right, that truth, it can be ugly.
You know, yeah,
it can be contrary
to
what we think of us ourselves and what we have done and done to each other. Because what you just mentioned about the Maroons, I remember Nana Nandi, I believe it is, she didn't sign. She said, I don't trust these people, but her son, Cujo, I think it is, he signed.
No.
No?
You have two very different groups of Maroons in Jamaica, and you have Nanny's people. Sometimes we call it Queen Nanny.
Right.
And then on the other side of the island in the cockpit country, you have the Maroons that at one point in time is led by Kudjo.
Kudjo, okay.
Certainly Kudjo from Ghana. And those were the ones who signed the treaty. Nani's people never signed it.
Right.
And that is why Nani is the only female national hero or shero of Jamaica. She's the bad sister. If she existed.
Yeah.
Because she may have been the composite of many African women. And that will bring us back to the theme I'm going to address when we come back, and that is the role of African women in history and also art.
Right on. And we're going to talk about the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. His birthday is coming up on the 17th. And, of course, August, there's a lot of things that happen here in August that they call August African Liberation Month. You know, although we have African Liberation Day, May 25th, and that day should be recognized and it should be acknowledged and it should be celebrated. Because we need African liberation. But this month, there's so many things that have happened. The Haitian Revolution, 1804, there's so many things. The March on Washington, which is about to happen again, Renoco.
I know it.
So we're going to take
is
a break.
Is March?
I know.
Now, my marching days are done. But
yeah, we're all over.
I salute anyone that's trying to advance the cause of our people and make the world a better place. Even though I may not agree with all the tactics, even though I may not even like the person, that's not important.
Right.
I think that we have to support each other. We talk a lot of times about unity, that Black people need to unite. Black people, some of us say, can unite. I think we have to talk about what we mean by Black unity. And for me, it is coming to mean to be able to see the bigger picture. And even if you have, in some cases, fundamental disagreements with other members of our community, the question becomes, what is the bigger issue? Are we able to submerge those differences for the common good? And that's the tricky part. We say we want unity,
right?
But most of us, when we say we want unity, we only want it on our terms. Mm-hmm. And we have to be the ones, in some cases, who define what the terms are. And I don't know if that's ever going to work.
Yeah, well, hey, it's a struggle. It is a constant struggle.
A constant struggle.
All right, dear brother. Thank you so much, Baba. Hold on. We'll be right back. Brothers and sisters, we'll be right back. This is African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Raúl, ya sabe una cosa. Amuna yeye, coma, sama cosa. Tanga tanga, umbuta tanga, ne sama cosa. Nika so.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And I hope that you'll get a chance to listen. Let me make a few announcements here before we continue the conversation with my good brother, Baba Renoko Rashidi. The RBG Centennial Conference, the RBG, Red, Black, and Green, this is 100 years of the Red, Black, and Green. It is this Saturday, the 8th and the 9th, Saturday and Sunday. And it's a, once again, it's virtual. So you need to go to rbgcentennial.com, rbgcentennial.com for the additional information. And that is this Saturday. Following next week, the 14th through the 16th, a 3-day, 100 years in the whirlwind, the official 2020 African August Virtual International Conference. And that's going to be dynamic. I have a lineup on that, but I'm going to save that for another time. And then, of course, there's also August 16th, the Race First Rally against terrorism, police brutality, mass incarceration, exploitation, miseducation, and racism. That is going to be August 16th. And more information on that, contact Brother Imhotep at 410-900-7527. 410-900-7527. And so we're going to get back to the conversation with Baba Rinoko Rashidi. That was Manu Dibango Somakusa. He passed this year from coronavirus. He passed this year from the coronavirus. Brother Rinoko.
Yes, sir, brother.
All right. We're going to continue on. Here's a quote from Marcus Garvey that always reminds me of you. If we as a people realize the greatness from which we came, we would be less likely to disrespect ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm going to be a part of a number of programs, Zoom programs, mm-hmm. honoring Marcus Garvey this month. And the theme that I'm a Garveyite, a Pan-Africanist. So the theme that I'm going to stress in every case, three parts. Four. First, that Garvey was not what we would call a historian, at least not what I would call one. Mm-hmm. But like Malcolm and others, he understood the importance of history in the movement. And so one of the themes I'm going to address in every case is that Garvey is a continuum, the most spectacular example of race men and race women who kept alive a tradition of another Africa, a great Africa, unlike the narratives that a lot of our people have been given. So Garvey is very, very important in that sense. Mm-hmm. Garvey understood the importance of history. So I want to talk about the people who came before Garvey. I want to talk about Garvey's sons and daughters. And I want to talk about Garvey's global vision in a way that most people don't. And we've already addressed it in the sense that you can find in Philosophy and Opinions, edited by Amy Jakes, that Garvey talked about, I believe what he said, the 400 million Negroes of India. I guess mm-hmm. this is in the 1920s.
Right.
That Garvey, you know, that there were organizations affiliated with Garvey or Garvey-like organizations among indigenous or aboriginal Australians. That after that Garvey had planned to go to Australia before he was railroaded by J. Edgar Hoover. And that Amy Jakes Garvey actually kept in contact with those indigenous Black movements in Australia.
Oh,
and so that to me is very, very powerful.
Yeah, it is. Wow.
That Garvey's vision of Pan-Africanism is broader than a lot of us might think. And that's very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I read a piece.
And Garvey didn't have Facebook.
No.
Garvey didn't have a Twitter account.
That's
Garvey didn't do Zoom or TV.
That's right.
This dark-skinned Black man with a thick accent from Jamaica galvanized the entire African world.
Yes,
he did.
We
cannot say enough good things about Marcus Garvey. He's extraordinary.
Exactly. It's phenomenal. You know, when we, with Dr. Mirma Ani, when we did Abakas and Simpson, which is African Spiritual Warfare, we resurrect the 1920 convention in New York City of Marcus Garvey. And it's unbelievable that 20,000 people. I mean, if we get 1,000 people to come at anything today, that is great. That is a miracle, particularly something that deals with us understanding who we are and how we can come together. Now, obviously, a concert, you know, you might have a concert in the park, you know, but now, man, you know, 20,000 people at the time at the old Madison Square Garden, and they were there for about a month.
It really is amazing.
It is.
But it also tells us something about the times that our sisters and brothers were living in at that time. This is right after World War One. African Americans had, in many cases, had moved out of the South, coming into the northern and midwestern cities looking for jobs. So it was a time of migration. And the reaction that they got as they moved into these places in 1919, you have what's called Red Summer.
That's right. Oh, man.
And it's called that because of a series of so-called race riots directed against African Americans. And then Tulsa. So you have all these dynamics going on at the time. And Garvey is in the center of that. A very, very, very good book on Garvey that I don't hear a lot of people talk about is a book called Black Power and the Garvey Movement by Theodore Vinson. I highly recommend that book. I actually read it when I was a freshman or a sophomore at the university. But it put Garvey and Garveyism within the context of a wider movement. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's very, very important, too. That it wasn't just Garvey. It was what Garvey symbolized, the times that he lived in, and the man himself. And then we can't leave out the role of Amy Jakes Garvey.
Right.
And I spend a lot of time with a brother that I like a lot. And that is Julius Garvey, one of Garvey's sons. He's a surgeon. And he tells me a lot of things, interesting things about Garvey and his personality, which I like, and about how, for example, Ho Chi Minh, you know, would come to UNIA meetings. But he would tell me that Amy Jakes Garvey was the one who really held the family together.
Okay.
And so it also gives us a chance to talk about Black women. And that's what I want to focus on in some measure for the rest of the show. And this upcoming presentation that I'm doing on August 28th and 29th called Black Women in History and Art. And over one night and one morning, I'm going to share with you on Zoom. I'm a Zoomer now.
You got into the Zoom.
Yeah, I'm a Zoomer. Hey, man. I like to fly far away.
That's right. Zoom, zoom, zoom.
Yeah. So I'm going to focus. I'm going to show 150 of my best original photos on Black women in history and art. It's going to be very, very special. And so I want to encourage people to check it out. Email me. I'm going to give my contact information for the, if you contact me, I'll send you the flyer, send you the details because it is on Zoom. My email address is renoko@hotmail.com. RUNOKO@hotmail.com, RUNOKO@hotmail.com, or you can call the brother up. I still answer the phone from time to time after the show, and that would be 323-803-8663. That's 803-863. Let me do that again. 323-803-8663.
Right, 8663. I've been giving that number out. Because, you know, I always announce your trip every program.
I appreciate you for that.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I'm hoping that because of that, some people will say, hey, you know what? Let me save some money up and take a trip to Africa, an experience of a lifetime. You know, I mean, the photos that you have, the things that you have done, it's beautiful, man. And people need to
make that connection. You, a question. You know, when we have these so-called interviews, they're really more like conversations. I find myself interviewing you a lot of times.
That's right. We just like when we
see each
other.
I haven't seen it yet. What is your impression of this Beyonce video that I'm hearing so much about?
I've only seen bits of it, so I can't really give a honest, true assessment of it. But from what I understand and from what I've seen, I love it. I mean, she even presented herself as Hetero. She presented herself as Hetero. She had the horns with the disc over her head. Yeah. I'm like, whoa. And, of course, there was some backlash about that, you know, because it's an African deity. And, of course, that for us who are Christian, that speaks of spookism. That speaks of, you know.
Yeah. Well, on one of my trips to Brazil, I took a group there. And they, you know, you have a kind of a traditional African-centered religion, spiritual belief there called Candomblé.
That's right.
And I find it fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's been said that we were taken from Africa, but we took Africa with us.
That's
right. And so there was the tour group that I was with, they managed to, I mean, the tour operator, they managed to do a special, I mean, a special Condom Blue ceremony for us. And it lasted a little long. And I tell you, these sisters and brothers in my group had a real issue with it. And one of them came up to me. In fact, she said, I'm representing several members of your group. And we are, our Christian sensibilities are offended. I was really angry about that. I said, my Christian sensibilities are offended, man. And that's the way a lot of us are, brother. Yeah. We have really programmed. But you know what? I don't even, you know, I really am sensitive about even what I post on Facebook now. Because how do you build unity in the community if people feel, although you consider it education, if they feel like you are attacking their religion? And other than race and sex, I don't know what's more sensitive to people than religion. And so, you know, I get all these Facebook messages. I monitor all these groups, and people send me things that they want to post. And a lot of them are about attacking, you know, Western religion and talking about black people who have adopted, you know, foreign religion, et cetera, et cetera. And lately I've stopped posting them, because how do you build with the people who practice Christianity or Islam or whatever the case may be, if you want unity in that community? If they perceive you as attacking their religion, that in many cases seems to destroy the mechanism that you would use to reach them. Does that make sense?
It makes deep sense. And I'm going to tell you.
What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah.
What do
well,
you think about that?
Well, you know, I've had a number of programs. In fact, I've had, I don't know if you know, Jeremiah Kamara. Have you?
No.
Oh, okay. After the program, I'm going to call you up. And we're going to talk about this, and I'm going to send you something.
Okay.
Right after the program. Jeremiah Kamara. Let me just say this, and I've said this and I'll continue to say this. The biggest impediment for African unity is the theologies that we believe. If we can be like Malcolm, he said, I understand when I come to talk about uniting to deal with this issue that are affecting us as a people, not because we're Christians or Muslims or Hebrew Israelites or whatever. It's because we're African people. So when I come to the table, I'm going to leave my religion at home. I'm going to keep it in my back pocket, because I know if I espouse Islam, then there's going to be some issues with those who are, who are Christian, you know, or either any other religion. So I'm going to just keep it in my back pocket, because I'm not here to talk about or try to convert somebody. I'm here to talk about what we can do collectively to deal with the issues that are affecting our people. And see, we don't have that in the forefront, because the Christian religion particularly, which is an individualistic religion, you know, it speaks to you individually, is antithetic to unity, is antithetic to us coming together as a people, you know.
But how do you think that the black Christian community is an important constituency in our community? Yes or no?
No.
You don't think so?
No. I have to say that.
I don't know if I agree with that, brother.
Yeah, I know. I have to say that. And the reason why I'm saying it like that is because the black Christian community has been about appeasing, has been about assimilation, has been about integration, you know.
Yes, but so many of our people are Christian in our community.
I know.
The majority of them are. So how do we deal with that?
Well, my thinking is, let us make the distinction, you know, let us make the distinction. It's just like we talked about before about being African and being black. And I know that you said, you know, we use it interchangeably. And for me, I want us to make a distinction. Because, Stephen A. Smith, he's black. Steve Harvey, he's black. They don't want to be African. They want to be black.
No. When I talk about it, let me just be clear for the audience's sake, if nothing else. I use the word black as a descriptive term for the people of Africa.
Okay.
That embraces a phenotype and certain, I guess we could say, cultural norms That doesn't mean that we are in agreement philosophically on how we see the world. And in that sense, Africa is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Even there are many people on the continent of Africa and Africans around the world who have vastly different worldviews, and some of which might be considered progressive and others not. So that's how I use African and Black.
Right.
I use them interchangeably. One amplifies the other.
Right.
I don't like Stephen A. Smith, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Me.
Just so you know.
Yeah, that... wrong way. I can't stand his ass. But anyway, we got some callers. We got some callers on. And so I'm going to take some phone calls and also consistently promote the August 28th and 29th Black Women in History and Art Zoom presentation by Renoco and what that's going to entail. 404-573. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, family. Good afternoon, Dr. Rashidi.
Hey,
thank you for being there. Hey. Two things I'd like to say at this particular point. In the conversation is, number one, I see myself as unapologetically and most proudly Black. And I relate to my Blackness as my cult, as a culture. So I am a Black woman, an African woman living here in America. And it's not my fault.
Okay, queen.
Don't blame me. But anyway, so, and number two, yeah, I see my Blackness as my culture. I relate to my Blackness as my culture. As I think they do over on the homeland. Number two is about the quote from Malcolm and a lot of our people being whatever religion they are. I don't think we should bring religion into the conversation of our Africanism or our unity, because really on the continent, I don't know, 50, Dr. Rashid, Renoco, you could give the percentage, are now actually Christian. So they think.
Sister, let me interrupt
so
y'all.
What are we going to do about that? Yes, I'm listening.
No, let me ask the question. This is for you and Brother Oshie, too. First, I appreciate you.
Is it
possible to not deal with religion in the struggle that we are waging?
Yes.
I know, Malcolm, when we come together, we put our religion in the closet.
Yes.
But I'm talking about realistically now. I'm talking about real deal 2020 August Babylon. Is it possible to come together, and this is an honest question, without dealing with religion?
Yes, I do. I think it's possible. The reason why is because when somebody, if they're thinking logically, if they're not so steeped and deeped within that particular religion, be it Islam or Seventh-day Adventists or Black Hebrew Israelites or definitely Christianity, if they're not so deep and they still have a feeling and a heart and a mind that we are African people, then yes. But if they, you know, if they're pretty much hardcore religious along with living in society, because the thing is, they can't think outside of that boundary. They can't
think
outside
of
it.
That. Brother Oshie, I don't think you can make, let me back up for a moment. Because I love all African people, no matter where you have to. I do. And I don't need to know what their religion is. If they have a mindset to come together and do something for our people here and abroad, which is what we're in desperate need of, I can work with you as long as I don't see you as an infiltrator, a COINTELPRO, or a spy for the other side. And now we know how to deal with them. I don't care what your religion is. That week, you know, as long as you don't try to betray our people as a culture.
Well, you know, one of the problems, though, Queen, is that the fact is that Christianity, Islam, and a few other are proselytizing religions. They seek converts. So if they're in that kind of setting, they may impose their particular beliefs. But if they don't, and they understand what is most important is African people coming together to be independent, self-determining, liberated, and sovereign, if they keep that in the forefront and they're willing to
do whatever they can to make that a reality, I'm down with that. I'm for that.
Yeah, I think that for me, I judge people on what they do. Mm-hmm. I don't really care about your religion one way or the other, to be honest with you.
You're right.
Religion is a deeply personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Garvey was a Roman Catholic when he died. Nat Turner was a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So was MLK, and Malcolm was a Muslim. Sheikh Anta Diop was a Muslim. And yet they made phenomenal contributions. And so to me, it's not the religion so much, it's what you do. But for many people, it's just the opposite of that. I've done presentations or try to do presentations, and the person will say, if Jesus Christ is not your personal Lord and Savior, whatever you say is irrelevant.
Exactly.
So to me, there's certain people who you're just not going to reach anywhere. That's why I raised that question.
Mm-hmm.
Can we really move forward without dealing with religion as an important part of the discussion?
And I believe that we can. You know, especially when you see the world how it is. I mean, you know, we got to come understanding. What are we battling? What are we dealing with? You know, we're dealing with a system that Europeans have imposed upon the world. And a big part of that system is the theology that they have imposed upon the world. And I don't give a damn if you have painted Christ black and all the other deities, whatever, because in Christianity, I don't care. You can have locks. The reality is Christianity is a religion that has been imposed and controlled by Europeans, by Caucasians.
You know you're gonna go to hell, don't you, brother?
Let me get this brother here. 646.
Talking that talk.
I know. 646. Good afternoon.
You can't add Ocean to Brother Renoco. Listen, I just have two quick questions. And maybe Renoco could answer them for me. Number one, it's a controversial question, but it must be answered honestly. What has Donald Trump done more to harm the black community than Joe Biden hasn't done?
Well, I don't hate anybody, but if I was going to hate anybody, Donald Trump would be on the top of the list.
I swear.
Let me finish. Not only is he a white nationalist, he's anti-environment.
Mm-hmm.
He's disrespectful of women.
Mm-hmm.
He glorifies ignorance. And all of those factors make me despise him. And if it means voting for Joe Biden to get rid of Trump, I'm the first one to vote. I'm going to encourage people to vote and go pick up people on the way to the polling place. Mm-hmm. That's what I think about him.
So the harm that Joe Biden has done to our brothers and sisters.
I don't even really want to hear it. You know, if that's what you want to talk about, I don't even really want to hear it. Donald Trump is the enemy of humanity. And that's the end of it for me.
So you're saying humanity.
Did you hear what I just said?
Jay, leave
hey,
it
brother,
alone.
Brother, I'm asking you
did
a
you hear what I just talking? Said?
Okay.
Are you talking to a child or to a man? Because you sound
Jay.
Like one of those niggas out in the street that
hold
I don't
on,
play
hold
that
on.
Game with.
Hold on, Jay. Hold on. Let me get control of the program here. You know. And we can't have it like that. We really can't. You know, we can't bring in somebody on. I can't bring anybody on and then have you insult them, you know. And so we're going to try to get my brother back up, you know, and get him back on. So, you know, we can't do that, and I will not allow that, you know. I know where he's coming from, and I know where you're coming from. You know, I could give less than a rat's ass about Trump or Biden. In fact,
I wouldn't vote for either. I've never voted for a Caucasian in my life. And nor would I. So I think Jay, because he hung up. And so now, and I'm quite sure he may not be calling back. So, but let me just say this. When you come on the program, and I know that somehow, you know, you got an opinion and you want to make sure your opinion is expressed. And once it is expressed and they are contrary, we can't have a back and forth with it. You know, you express yours, there's a counter, and that's it. Because you see, it will disrupt the whole program. And so right now, you know, my guest is gone. And okay, you might argue about some sensibilities and so forth, but he didn't want to get into that debate. He said it. That's it. And then you push you as the saying goes, the envelope. And I could give less than a rat's ass about what Trump has done, and Joe Biden. Because when you know, and I know you do know, Jay, and listeners, there's not going to be anything fundamentally different between the two in the final outcome, because Caucasians are still going to be in control. Now, in the time of Trump, you've seen a more sensibility. We got a caller, 414-507.
Hey, Oshi.
Hey, what's up? What's up, brother?
Real, man. Yeah, that was unfortunate, man. That was really unfortunate, man, that Brother Rinocco. Anyway.
Yeah.
But my question was, man, I wanted to get back more to the historical perspective. And, one thing, this is talking about religion. And the diaspora in our struggle for freedom, but in African concept, God permeates every idea, belief system that we have. So, but there's a difference between religion and our belief in God.
Right. There's a difference between LaRue. There's a difference between religion and spirituality.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Right. And so to come to that particular understanding that African people had a spirituality from time immortal, from time beginning, you know, and what Europeans have done, they developed and crafted a religion, and they imposed that religion on the planet. The most dominant religion.
And their spirituality too.
Say what?
And their spirituality. European spirituality is different from African spirituality.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So Europeans impose their religion and their spirituality on us. And that's why a lot of us got the attitude that we have towards each other because of what was imposed on us.
Mm-hmm.
The disrespect. But I wanted to ask Brother Rinocco, hopefully he's listening and he might call back in relation to this question. But I've been hearing a lot of talk about black Africans, Americans, being indigenous to America.
Oh, and, yeah. Right.
Yes.
Oh, he would have dealt with that. I would love to have had him come on and talk about that, because we talked about that on a program I did a couple of years ago because of ADOS, but the other ones who believe that we are indigenous to America. That in fact, I mean, they take that to LaRue. They take that to a whole nother level, because they say there were no slave ships. We have been here all this time. In fact, what they have said is that they were taken from here and sent to England and then came back and put into servitude. I mean, I'm just like tripping on what they're talking about, man.
Yeah.
I'm tripping. I'm like, you got to be kidding.
And what it does is it breaks our African connection, man.
Yeah.
It seems like. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, anyway, so that was my question, man. Hopefully, man, Brother Renoco, man, will call back, man. Man, how you gonna get in an argument with that brother, man? I don't know. You know.
Yeah. But hey, man.
Even if I believe the opposite of what he's saying, he got so much clout with me that I'm gonna put mine on hold. You know what I'm saying?
Well, hey, listen. He has done monumental work. He has done some serious work. He has done firsthand or what is called primary research. He has physically gone literally around the world documenting our presence. He has written I don't know how many books and partnered with books with some of the greatest of our greatest scholars. You know? I mean, so
hey, Brother Oshie, check this out. One time he came to Milwaukee, and man, it was about like maybe 8 people in the whole room, and he was so friendly, man. He wasn't big headed, none of that.
No, he's a good brother, man.
He's a good brother.
Yes.
But I did get a chance, Oshie. I did give him a chance. I did get a chance to give him a copy of Why We Shouldn't Call Our Ancestors Slaves.
Right on.
Yes. He took it, man, and now, I mean, even in a lot of his one post I was reading, he says, "I'm not a descendant of slaves."
Mm-hmm.
That was, man. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yep. The impact.
But anyway, man, we drank wine and stuff. We had a good time.
Yeah. Right on.
Yeah, man. But man.
Well, I've caught him. I must not have been in Milwaukee at the time because every time he's been to Milwaukee in the last 20 years, I know. In fact, I picked him up from the airport and took him to his hotel, and we drove around after the presentation. I know Josephine Hill. I know Sister Josephine Hill.
Josephine, we was at her center.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We was there.
Yep, I was there. So, I mean, you know, yeah. Right. Yeah, man.
Man, so hopefully, man, Brother Renoco, if you're listening, call back, brother.
Yeah. Let me catch this call. 404-704. Just hang on, Brother Ruru. 404-573. You got a question? Oh. Hey, Queen.
Hi. But no, I was just wondering two things actually. What was Jay's other comment about Biden?
Well, Jay's comment was basically Biden is just as bad as Trump. And what Renoco said, that this is the thing about Trump, why I wouldn't support him and not bad. And then they got a tete-a-tete before I could either mute either one of them. And then bam, next thing I know, the brother said, I don't want to deal with this, you know? And so,
oh, Rashidi hung up.
Yeah.
Dr. Rashidi. Okay.
Yeah.
Is Jay still there? Is he still on the line or he's gone too?
No. Jay is still on the line, I guess. You want to talk to Jay?
Well, I'd like to hear what he had to say.
Okay.
I may make a comment. And number two, if you have any information about Dr. Rashidi's program.
I sure do.
And the other things that are going on in this African.
I sure do. And I made an announcement of that, and I can do that for you personally. I don't plan on going anywhere, so I'll be here. I'm here right here at home.
Okay, cool. You did say you would talk to the brother after the program anyhow.
So. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's see what Jay got, you know.
Okay.
So we can cool him out. Cool out, Jay.
Hey, Jay. How you doing, man? You all right?
Hey, listen. I'm fine. I mean, I don't have any problem nor no issue at all. I mean, it's just a way that you talk to men. I'm a grown man. I'm not a child, so... You, number one, can't dismiss me, you can't disrespect me, and you can't talk down to me regardless of who you are and what you achieve. And he's done that not only to me, but he's done that to others. I don't play that game because I have no reason to, because just like he put his pants on, I put my pants on. Just like he get up in the morning and live life, I get up in the morning and live life. And he just basically showed this character by hanging up the phone and not taking your call to talk to him and continue the show, because like you did, you muted me, and I could have came back in and said something, but I didn't do that because that wasn't my place.
Let me say this, Jay. I appreciate you for that. But by the same token, you know, Jay, for future, because I know you've been consistent from the day I came on to Time for an Awakening, and I appreciate that, you know. But once, to me, that, and now it's my job to, as the host, to make sure that it really doesn't happen, but sometimes it gets away from me, like this instant, you know, that y'all went back and forth, and he just said, I don't want to hear it again, and then, bam, here you come with it again. So he was like, I don't want to hear it.
But Oshie, you, listen, the way that he said it was basically like, in shut up, you don't have the right to question me about what my reply was and what my reply is in an arrogant and nasty tone of voice like I'm his subservient. Yo, my man, I don't care nothing about that Negro.
Can I say something? Am I on?
Hold on, Queen.
Yeah. Yes. Can I say something?
Go ahead, Queen.
May I? Yes. It, to me, brothers, this that type of the conversation that you're having now is kind of private. Y'all can do that. What I wanted to hear from you, Brother Jay, was what was your, and I think that's where you should come in on. And all the other stuff, we can have that conversation at another time. So you can bear your soul. But what was about Biden?
My second point to Biden was just basically going to be, with all of his history and all of the things that he's done to black people that is still affecting our people today, if he get into office, what will he do, number one, to pay for what he's done to our people? What will his policies be like? And if you look at him honestly and the people that he's surrounding himself with, the Susan Rices of the world, who to me is one of the most evilest women on the planet, to be honest with you, she's probably worse than Hillary Clinton, as far as I'm concerned. And to me, think about this, Queen, and think about this, OC. Wouldn't it be something if he gets in the office and because of his lack of cognitive dissonance and his dementia, his old time is coming on, he has to resign from the presidency, and Susan Rice is his vice president, and she becomes the president? It would be worse than Hillary Clinton being president, because she's more of a warmonger and a hawk than Hillary Clinton is, and you know what Hillary Clinton is. So, I mean, that was just basically it. Are we as a black community really getting anything from Joe Biden more than what we've already getting from Trump and getting from Trump? And will our condition be better? That's all. That was
you
it.
Know, you
and
know,
I would love to see what his response would have been based on that.
Well, let me just say this, and I think that regardless of who's in the White House, and that has been demonstrated by Barack being in the White House, it doesn't make a difference, because if it's a male, female, or whatever so-called nationality that the individual is, the bottom line to that person, they are in that position to help maintain and sustain the privilege that Europeans, Caucasian, white people have established for themselves. What you see is symbolism without substance. When you see the flag of Mississippi go down, when you see Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben and I mean all these other things that are happening, where they're talking about what they're not going to talk about is the real deal, and that is economic equity. They're not going to talk about that. They're not going to talk about redistribution of wealth. They're not going to talk about reparation. They ain't going to talk about none of that. They'll give you all of this old fluff. Give you, once again, the continuation of the illusion of inclusion. But they're not
going to. Yeah, but Oshie.
Hold on, Jay. Hold on, Jay. Go ahead, LaRue.
Okay. Now, politics, I'm in agreement with you. I mean, that's their table. They're going to do what they want to at that table. And they're going to make sure that whatever happens at that table is going to happen for their benefit. Our focus needs to be on what we're doing and how we can get out of this mess. That's where our focus should be. Not on, we need to support them because they're going to treat us better. No, that's not going to happen. It's like two teams. And so we're focusing on what the other team is doing, and maybe they won't play us so hard if we're nice to them. No. So ain't no way in the world that we should be falling out over no kind of political argument about what they're doing. And we ain't even got politics ourselves, amongst ourselves. That's what we need, a black government. We need a black African government.
Yeah,
we're
but
not
it ain't here.
About that.
Yeah, well, it ain't here.
Yeah, but you know what the thing is that we're missing? And most people are really not getting it? It's the psychological hold that white people have over us so that we behave in the manner in which we do. Like, you know, in all honesty, you know, when you study the works of Bobby Wright, Amos Wilson, Naeem Akbar, and some of the others, they deal with it from an African perspective, and you having control of your African ideas, opinions, thoughts, and things of that nature. Our problem is we don't deal with things from an African perspective to where as we dominate the argument to which the narrative is put forward. So whereby they could say anything they want to about how Joe Biden is good for you, better than what Trump is, but they're both the same devils, but you don't have the mental capacity, unfortunately, as a people, because we haven't been programmed to be able to decipher which one is better than the other, when the reality is that they both have one goal and objective, is to build and grow the empire. That's why we got caught up in the quagmire we did with Barack Obama, because we never realized he wasn't there for black people. He was there to build and grow the empire until we figure that out. And we
and so what did I Jay, what did I say earlier? I said the person who is the president of the United States of America, he or she, whatever nationality that individual might be, the main purpose for them to be in that position is to maintain and sustain the privilege that Europeans, Caucasians, white folks, crackers, whatever you want to call them, have in this country and in this world. It's the bottom line.
But the reason, but Oshie, I agree with you 100%. But the reason is our people don't understand that from a psychological perspective. And we don't think that black is powerful. We don't think that African is powerful. We think that the only power in this society is what whites dictate. You know, until we get to that point to where we can separate white rhetoric from black truth, we're just going to be in the same position. It's just like I've always said. There's a difference in psychology from an African perspective and a European perspective. If you read it and you study the works of what they teach you in college and then compare it to the works of Naeem Akbar, Bobby Wright, Francis Crutch Wamsley, Amos Wilson, yo, it changes your whole perspective. And that's where you get people like us who understand and see the game for what it is. We don't get caught up in the emotionalism of the rhetoric of two enemies. Because the bottom line is, Donald Trump is only doing what he's supposed to do. The sadness is, he's not intelligent enough to behave in the manner in which he should. Think about this, and I'll leave it on this note. Imagine if the roles were reversed, and Mike Pence was the president, and Donald Trump was the vice president. Do you know the Democratic Party would have no chance whatsoever because of one simple thing? The presentation of Pence would be far better than the presentation in the madness of Trump. But you know something? Pence is more evil and wicked and demonic than Trump is.
Yeah, because he's steeped in theology. He's steeped in Christian evangelical theology. I mean, Trump is what he is, and he is an egotistical, narcissistic, egomaniac.
He's a fool.
He is a fool. He's a fool. You know, and in fact, you know, I don't know about you, but to me, I'm thinking, how could anyone even think about voting for this man when you know his history? I look at Donald Trump from the first time I think I came to see him on television. I hated him. I hated him. I hate a Caucasian who's so arrogant, who think he know everything, you know, do everything. And then, let me finish. Jay, let me finish.
Okay.
And because I seen what he has done over that time. I seen what he has done. I seen the situation that happened in Jersey. I seen the situation that happened with the Central Park Five. I seen all these other situations. And then how he campaigned, the stuff he said and how he campaigned. And then when he got into office, is how he behaved, how he alienated the American allies to deal with the American dictators. I mean, the foreign dictators. I mean, all of this stuff. Everything about Trump says to me, this cat is not even worthy of being even possibly remotely being.
But you missing one thing, Oshie. You missing one thing. Let me tell you what you missing. You said, how could anybody vote for Trump? You know where you missing out as? The question should be, how could any white person justify voting for Trump? That's where we make the mistake at, because black people already, those that know, they ain't never going to vote for him. The question has become, how
white
do you make
privilege and white superiority? That's why
they vote for him. How do you make white folks support the fact that they're not only hurting themselves, but they're hurting the world? We don't do that.
Are you there?
Hold on, Queen.
No, go ahead. I'm just saying they vote for him on account of white privilege and white superiority. That's why they won't vote for him.
Go ahead, LaRue.
Brother Oshie.
Go ahead, LaRue.
Look how what we started talking about, and look at what we end up talking about. The conversation has really deteriorated because we was talking about black people and the diaspora and all of that. Now, our focus is on white people and what they're doing. We got way off the mark on this one. Way off the mark.
I don't think so, Aki. We got a round conversation. We have to address all the aspects that affect us. And this is one of them. We can always go back home and talk about what we need to do.
But let's not disparage one another.
I think we're still on the mark.
Oh, we're on the mark. Let us do this. Let us do this because I'm at a close. I appreciate all of you for listening, for calling in, for hopefully telling others about the program. I appreciate all of that. But what I would love for us to do is, particularly if I have a guest on, you know, try your best not to disparage the guest, even though you may have some information and knowledge that he or she may not have, but please and respect the program. I'm going to do my best to come on here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to respect you as a listener, you know. And you know, I'm not that kind of host. And what I like is just for us to have dialogue and come to understanding to our situation and how we can work together. Because the bottom line, Renoco had posed about Christianity. And I said, really, it's hard to work with people who are steeped into the religion, who are steeped into Christianity, because Christianity is a religion that does not afford or does not promote collectivism, does not promote unity. It doesn't. It's an individualistic religion. I'm saved and highly favored, you know. But listen, my time is up. I got to go. I thank you all. I really do. You have a blessed and wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Brother O.C.
All right, man. Appreciate y'all. We end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, I appreciate you listening. You have a great weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bivihodie. Bivihodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. We will be victorious. Bivihodie. Have a good weekend, family. See you on Monday. Peace.